Okay, I think we're recording now.
Yep, we do, aren't I?
Okay, so I have Bora and Karen and Art and Jay and Barbara and Scott. Who else called in?
This is Joyce.
Hi, Joyce. Okay, it's been a while since I've been on. I've been at meetings or on vacation last week. I've had lots of very interesting discussions the past couple of weeks, but right now we'll start with... Are there any announcements of things that are going on or input people would like? Okay, well, I can talk a little bit about the ESIF Federation meeting, which was 2 weeks ago, in particular the Climate Change Education Work Group kickoff we had there. It was a very interesting meeting. Basically, the ESIF Federation, for those of you who are not familiar with it, ESIF is the Earth Science Information Partners. So it's the Federation of Earth Science Information Partners. And I've been part of that group for quite a while and basically got the education committee off the ground there quite a while ago. And then the proposed that they start a climate change education work group. And the purpose of the meeting last week, we had two 90-minute sessions, was to explore the needs of the climate change education community and how the ESIF Federation, what kind of activities might this work group put together within the education committee and to support this effort. And so some of the things that came up that I want to make you aware of, and some of you might eventually want to take advantage of this group at some point, because they have meetings twice a year, once in January in the D.C. area and once in July generally, which bounces around the country. But some of the activities that were discussed, ones that I knew we had immediate needs for were the science review of educational resources. In the Clean Pathway Project, as most of you know, we're going through this rigorous review process of each educational resource that we consider, both scientifically and pedagogically, as well as the technical issues around it. And we've been struggling to get science reviews. Part of it is because the expertise needed is so varied. You can't just identify 5 or 10 scientists and think that they're going to cover all of the subjects you might come across. The ESIF Federation is an organization of about 120 organizations, most of which are science organizations, so the breadth of science expertise is huge. And so one of the avenues that we're exploring how to do is take advantage of these two meetings a year to engage scientists in reviewing some of our resources. So that's one avenue that we have an immediate need for. Then some of the others are, as those of you who might write proposals around climate change issues or environmental issues that affect your particular region, the environmental issues might be somewhat unique, and the Federation and this working group might be able to identify the scientific expertise to be able to bring in, build into your project. So that's another avenue that I was promoting there. Some of the other ideas included identifying or creating workshops for teachers. At the summer meeting, we traditionally have teacher education workshops, and we could focus those around climate issues. So that was another area. And another interesting area is educating policymakers. And since the meeting in January is always in the D.C. area, and this to take advantage of the fact that we don't have to, members of the government agencies and don't really have to travel or even commit even a whole day to coming to the meeting, to take advantage of that and to provide workshops for policymakers there. So those are just some of the ideas, and this committee will be having monthly telecons as part of the education committee. So that's an avenue that we might be able to take advantage of as we move forward. So that was what was discussed last weekend. What I will do is there is an online wiki where all of the notes from that meeting and the PowerPoint presentations are posted, and I will send that out to the listserv so that everybody can see, maybe also post it on the website.
Tamara, you mentioned that the January meeting was in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And does the other one float around the country, or is it always in a certain area?
No, that one floats around, and the reason for that is so that it started off so that it would share the travel for the participants, so that sometimes it's in California and those on the West Coast don't have to go so far, and vice versa. However, as we, I think starting a couple years ago, and it was Margaret Mooney who first started organizing these, to have the summer meeting be a meeting where we invite educators to break out strands to provide professional development for teachers. By moving it around the country, we then try to engage the teachers that are local so that we can get much more participation. So last summer it was in Knoxville, Tennessee. This coming year it's going to be in Wisconsin. It's been in Santa Barbara, California. It's been in Portland, Oregon. Basically all over the place. Basically they depend on the members to help local groups organize it. But as I said, it's 120 organizations, so we are spread all over the country. So finding venues hasn't really been the problem.
Tamara, this is Marion. Isn't the summer meeting coming up in Santa Fe?
Oh, you're right. I made a mistake.
The next meeting is
in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I think it was in, I don't know why I thought it was in Wisconsin.
I don't know.
Something else must be happening in Wisconsin.
I can verify that, Doug is saying. I remember when Carol was scouting in New Mexico for that meeting.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments or announcements? Okay, if not, then we can move on.
Well, this is Martha, and Lynn on the phone?
Yep, I'm here, hi.
Oh, Lynn, are we going to talk about our proposal, or are we just going to do it and then ask for feedback?
Well, this whole CLN telecon, a lot of it's going to be about trying to figure out who is going to be,
okay.
who wants to put together the proposal for NAAE, right?
Right. So I did get your email, Martha, and this is a perfect telecon to discuss that in the context, because we're going to have Karen and Bora do a presentation about this meeting and the strand and how to engage with it, and then the discussion will broaden out to the proposals that we might want to make. And we did this last year and turned in a coordinated set of proposals. So we'll further discuss your ideas after their presentations. Okay, so with that, I will turn it over to Karen and Bora. The PowerPoints are on the website. You can download them if you haven't already. Karen and Bora are both past presidents, is that right, of NAAE.
Yep.
And have been involved in the Climate Literacy Network for well over a year, so and maybe even two. So I'll turn it over to them to move forward.
Thanks, Tamara. If you haven't already, on Tamara's email from this morning, clicked on the cleannet.org link, please click on that so that you're on the teleconferences page. And if you look down at today's teleconference announcement. The first link is naae.org/call for presentations. And please click on that so that you're looking at the call for presentations for the NAAE 2011 conference on the NAAE website. And if you go down and look at the box on the left, it says Proposal Submission and Review Process in English. Is everybody finding that?
I have it.
And just click on the In English line, and it'll allow you to open up the proposal submission and review process document that lists, first of all, the conference strands, and you'll see that climate change education is one of the major strands of the conference this year. Under that list of conference strands, the first paragraph says, presentations that address elements of the NAAEE guidelines for excellence and or support the five strategic initiatives in our strategic plan are preferred. The reason why I start by pointing this out to you is much of what Bora and I are going to say over the next 10 or 15 minutes will be about the strategic initiatives and the guidelines for excellence. And when you submit a proposal, if you want the proposal accepted, you have to address those two things. And
Karen,
so what we're going
to... I'm not seeing that paragraph that you just stated.
Yeah,
that
I'm not either.
Okay.
PDF document?
At the, if you click the in English for the call for proposals.
Yeah, I did that.
You should have a PDF that pops up, and it has the conference strands, then the conference thread, and right
yeah.
under sustainability education it says, presentations that address elements of the NAAEE guidelines for excellence and or support the five strategic...
This is in the document called Proposal Submission and Review?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
First paragraph. This is Frank Niepold. This makes sense in a second. Did the NAAEE Excellence in Environmental Education alignment document for CLEAN relative to climate literacy get finalized? Is that document done?
Bora, you were the one that was doing that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I submitted it.
Okay.
Right. So the reason I'm asking is it might be...
Who did you give it to? Did you give it to me?
To you and Scott, don't you have it?
Okay. I just need to find it.
And we'll get, Frank, we will get to that shortly.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
We're going to preview that document as well.
Yeah, it's a good question.
The reason, absolutely, the reason I wanted you to all see this first paragraph under the proposal submission and review process is that the NAAE Guidelines for Excellence, five strategic initiatives, are important if you're planning on submitting a conference proposal. If you go back to the, and we'll come back to this document later, if you'll go back to the CLEAN announcement for the teleconference today, you'll see beneath the link that you just clicked on, you'll see the two links for the PowerPoint slides that Bora and I have. It says K. Holweg slides for 1811. If you'll click on that, you'll open slides, and the first slide says Introduction to the North American Association for Environmental Education. What I want to do in the next... I don't know, I think there are 8 slides, is give you a quick introduction to the organization and an overview to those 5 strategic initiatives. Have you all found the PowerPoint slides?
Okay. There are 2. It says K. Holweg and B. Simmons.
Click on the K. Holweg one first,
sure.
Please.
Okay. Here's
what I think. And I'm going to... advance to the second slide and begin. When I finish the first slide, I'll ask again if you still haven't found it. NAAEE was founded 40 years ago and is a professional organization with really a range of members. Our members include non-formal organizations like small nature centers or environmental education centers, as well as large museums and science centers, K-12 classroom teachers and administrators, university instructors and graduate students, government agencies, and also corporations. And the final bullet on that slide explains our view of environmental education. And our definition of environmental education includes both the skills, that learners need to acquire to be environmentally literate, and content that they need to understand the issues. And what we say is that we teach people how to think, not what to think. The next slide states our vision, and our intent is by 2015, and this is from our new strategic plan, to be the premier organization in Canada, the United States, and Mexico providing environmental educators and the organizations that train, employ, and support those educators with professional development, guidelines for excellence, networking, and advocacy for environmental education, all within a culture of inclusivity. On the next slide, our mission is stated. And what we do is advance environmental education and support environmental educators in Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. And then are listed the six values that we hold dear and incorporate into all of our work. The next two slides describe the five strategic initiatives that were referred to in the call for proposals. It's important to think about these as you're developing your proposal so that in the call for proposal, in your proposal application, you can refer to the one or the two that most closely address what you're proposing. Our strategic initiatives are focused on providing the highest quality research-based programs, products, and services for diverse individuals and organizations engaged in environmental education. And I know those of you whose projects I'm familiar with are all research-based high-quality programs. So this is an important one, I think, for all of you to think about. Strengthen organizational capacity to operate a thriving enterprise as a model for fiscal and environmental sustainability. That may apply to some of your programs. Increase our presence and partnerships with organizations that train, employ, and support environmental educators in Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. This is one of the ones that we highlighted in the funding on the symposium on funding for climate change education last year, because one of our main purposes for that symposium was to acquaint everybody with the kinds of partnerships they could engage in to support climate change education. The next strategic initiative is to increase the diversity of NAAEE's membership and leadership. And the final one is to serve as a highly trusted, inclusive, and visible advocate for environmental education in all three North American countries. The next slide, just briefly, I wanted to review the primary programs of the association. Bora is going to talk to you about the guidelines for excellence in environmental education that Frank has already mentioned. In a moment. We also have a higher education directory of all the higher ed institutions that offer environmental education courses and programs. We have a site called EE Link that lists everything from job openings and grants that are available to teaching and learning resources and news of the week or month. There's a group that's been working on a professional EE certification program that is really focused at state level because of the way certification happens within our country, and offers a national overall perspective on certification and then state level programs within that. There's an advocacy network that works primarily with Congress on appropriations for environmental education and legislation like No Child Left Inside that's been moving forward over the last couple of years. There are state and provincial affiliates, 40 some odd at this point, And there's an awards program as well as a number of different research projects. The one that was listed, that's listed here, is the National Environmental Literacy Assessment, which has been funded by EPA and NOAA. And the final slide, I just wanted to give you an overview of the way the conference is organized so that you're familiar with the different kinds of sessions that are possible at our 2011 conference. I've listed the date and the location there at the top in case you don't already have that information. But what's most important is that on Wednesday, October 12th, there's an all-day workshop, and I know a lot of you are interested in that. Those workshops are, as you all have implied by your suggestions in your emails, multifaceted and go on all day, usually attract a combination of informal educators who work with schools and with teachers, as well as classroom teachers and also higher education folks who work with teachers either on pre-service or in-service education.
How many are those, or in terms of the, once one is accepted, in terms of participants, is there a maximum number or a usual number of how many people do you...
They have a cutoff number, and it primarily depends on the amount of money that's needed to make it a go. You know, there will be things like an internet connection, which I'm sure you'll want to have based on the email traffic I've seen, so that there will be a required minimum number to sign up, and I don't think that should be a problem. You can also put a maximum number that we want no more than, and when the registration reaches that level, they'll cut it off.
And what kind of range has been happened in the past?
Anywhere from 10 or 15 to 50 or 60.
Yeah, I was going to say that 50 or 60 is pretty much the top for most of the pre-conference workshops. Primarily for, there's a couple of different reasons. One is that it means people have to come in a day early, which obviously has additional cost to it. The workshops are an additional fee, because they need to cover the costs of that workshop. And there's concurrently a research seminar going on, a two-day meeting of the researchers. So there's a lot of stuff going on, but the workshops are very popular, and you get a lot of good people. I've had a lot of success with pre-conference workshops.
The one other thing I wanted to mention about the workshops is I checked with our conference manager and asked somebody in their email suggested linking up with the Informal Education Commission to make sure that there was an internal NAAEE sponsor for the workshop. And the conference manager told me that they didn't think we needed to go through that hoop, that if a climate change education workshop was proposed, it would be considered as a standalone workshop and would be evaluated on its own merit. Following the workshops on the evening of October 12th, there's an opening celebration and a keynote. And then on October 13th, 14th, and 15th, there are concurrent sessions. I've listed the four different kinds of concurrent sessions. The symposia or panels are conducted in a meet the press kind of style with a panel of discussions and then questions from the audience. The roundtable discussions are an opportunity for people to interact with project leaders on a one-on-one or small group basis. The hands-on sessions are little mini workshops that obviously instead of being a full day long are only an hour and 20 minutes long. And the traditional presentations are just what they say. In a room organized with theater seating and either a 20-minute or a 40-minute traditional presentation.
Can I ask a question? This is Tamara.
Sure.
In the hands-on sessions, can you really have people working on computers? I mean, is that possible to think about?
It is possible to think about, but there is an expense to it. And I can't talk to you specifically about the dollar amounts, but...
An expense on the part of the person proposing it?
I believe so, and we'd need to check into that and okay. Get details. I don't have those details at my fingertips.
Okay.
And then the other sessions are, starting from the bottom, are a traditional kind of exhibit hall, which NOAA and NASA and... EPA and the U.S. Forest Service have traditionally had exhibits in the past, as well as all sorts of other entities. There are poster sessions, which are like you've experienced at other conferences, and there's always a social event planned around the browsing of the poster sessions, a dessert or a buffet dinner or something like that. And then there are film sessions specifically designed in a place where there's the AV equipment necessary to show films, and there are special proposal guidelines for film sessions. So having reviewed those sessions, I'd like to switch over to Bora and have her go through with you what it means on the proposal guidelines for your presentation to address the NAAEE guidelines. Bora?
Yep. I just wanted to make a comment before we move on to Bora's, is that the
sure.
roundtable discussion, we had one for the Climate Literacy Network last year, which was very effective in
yeah.
terms of letting people know. So we'll probably submit a proposal to do one of those.
And I can just pop in about roundtables, is that I love them. I think that they put a lot of things into one room. It's pretty much a dedicated time. There's not very much else going on at that time. And people wander around. You have great one-on-one conversations with a lot of people. So they're fun to go to, but they're also fun to present at.
Right. You know, because it's more of a conversation, not really a presentation.
Right, right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's really a way to engage individuals. Similar to a poster session, but you're sitting around a table instead.
Exactly. Yeah, if what you're doing isn't as visual as a poster session would be.
Yeah.
The round
Do you know if, one thing to ask is, would we have internet connectivity there?
No, in the round tables you don't have internet. You
okay.
don't have any AV possibilities.
Yeah, okay.
So you'd have to have it, you know, sort of self-contained on your own computer.
That works too. I mean, it did last time.
Yeah.
I just was very impressed with how well it worked.
Yeah. So if you can click on the second set of slides, which say B. Simmons, so it was right underneath where you clicked on for Karen's.
If they're not coming up, is there any trick? I can't.
I had to click on it twice.
Okay. Yeah, because I just clicked on it and it came up. So
I got them.
You got them?
Yeah.
Where do we go?
So if you're on the CleanNet website, where you were before to get the for the upcoming teleconferences, and so underneath where you clicked on for Karen's, where it says K Hallweg slides, and then it says B. Simmons slides for 1.18.11. So if you click on that, and you may have to double click, it should pop up with bright blue slides. Anybody not get it? Or
yeah, mine's not coming up.
Well, I'll try to walk you through it in a way that you know, you understand what I'm talking about. So basically, this is it's the National Project for Excellence in Environmental Education. It was initiated by NAAEE in 1993. Really got off the ground in the following year in 1994. Our primary if you move on to the next slide, the primary sponsor for the project is US EPA, the Office of Environmental Education. And we've been fortunate enough to have funding through them for 15 years, which is truly fortunate. We've also had sponsors from Forest Service and Fish and Wildlife and a couple of different foundations. And I just always feel it's good to recognize your sponsors because they're wonderful. Next slide. The purpose, the overall big arching purpose of this project is to set standards for high-quality environmental education in schools and other learning settings. It was conceived and sort of developed during some of the hoopla of lots of critics of environmental education around the quality of our materials and issues around advocacy. It was also conceived during a lot of the early education reform and standard setting period of the mid-90s. Next slide. We've organized it and thought about what are the essential underpinnings of environmental education. And these basically pervade throughout all of the different projects or pieces and publications of the project. So first and foremost is the notion of systems and systems thinking, but also the idea of interdependence, and particularly the interdependence of human systems on the environment, how we are impacted by the environment and our systems are impacted, as well as how we impact in natural environmental systems. The notion of it, the importance of where one lives, so that whole teaching and learning from the local up to the global, but always rooting ourselves in our local environment and region. That environmental education is integrated and infused across the curriculum when we're talking about the formal K-12 curriculum, and that it's not just science, that it's social studies and the fine arts and health being incredibly important. Roots in the real world, that we're talking about hands-on activities, again, not just with the natural environment and getting kids outdoors, although that's incredibly important, but also that we're trying to get people truly engaged in investigating environmental issues and analyzing those environmental issues and then coming up with action strategies and following through. And the final of our underpinnings is this notion of lifelong learning, and it's the traditional sense of lifelong learning, that environmental education isn't just about K-12, but it's also that we, in order to be lifelong learners and environmentally literate, we need to develop critical thinking and creative thinking and communication skills. So it's kind of the 21st century skills notion. Next slide is just a graphic for those who don't have slides. Guidelines for Excellence, we've published a number of different documents, but there are five primary documents, and these are the ones that you would be referring to most likely in your proposal. So next slide. Each of these documents, so each of what we refer to as the guidelines, were developed through public participatory processes. Most often they took at least 2 years to develop each one of them, sometimes longer. Our whole purpose was to engage educators across the spectrum, so the non-formal, the K-12 educator, community educators, in a deep discussion about the quality of environmental education. So we had multiple drafts of each one of these documents that was commented on by literally thousands of individuals and organizations. And one of the other important pieces is that by using this critique and consensus process, we have explicitly been trying to build environmental education as a profession. So get people to truly reflect on what it is it means to be an environmental educator. So next slide. What I want to do is just run quickly through the five different sets of guidelines so you have a sense of what they are, and then I'll give you a link where you can go and explore more if you want to.
Hey, Bora?
Yeah.
I just asked you a question. I did finally get Karen's, and it says the title of it is K-13.Holweg. Do you know the title of your PowerPoint?
What is it? It's B. Simmons slides for 1.18 point. Yeah, I don't know what the...
Okay. Yeah.
That's what's up on
it's,
there.
All right, sorry.
It's B. N.B. Simmons.
Yeah.
S.P. Simmons.
Oh, thanks. Okay, B.
N.B.S.P. Simmons.
Oh, I see. Ah, I can see
okay,
that now.
Okay, now I got it. Thank you, Frank.
Oh, good. Okay. Thanks.
Great.
Okay, so the first set of guidelines have to do with instructional materials. So they basically set out the key characteristics of quality in instructional materials for environmental education. And they, our notion is that they can be used for people who are developing materials, but also people who are reviewing or adopting materials or recommending materials. So looking at them in terms of are they encouraging critical thinking and problem solving and creative thinking? Are they encouraging good quality accuracy and those sorts of things and good pedagogy? So it's six key characteristics and it goes on from there. So if you are talking about instructional materials in your proposal, you may want to refer to the guideline, to the materials guidelines. Next slide. The second set of guidelines are the K-12. And basically what these are, the equivalent for environmental education and environmental literacy of national standards. So they were developed very much to model the national science education standards, the social studies, history, civics, etc. They're benchmarked at 4th, 8th, and 12th grade. And basically, we have them referenced to the standards that were developed at that same, the other standards, reading, English language arts, mathematics, etc. So if you are talking about curriculum materials or talking about sequencing or concepts and skills in your presentation, these guidelines may well be ones that you would want to reference as, you know, how your materials and your ideas of concepts and skills relate to this overall environmental literacy framework. Next slide is the third set of guidelines we developed had to do with the preparation and professional development of environmental educators. Karen mentioned that one of the NAAE initiatives is looking at certification of environmental educators, and there's something like 17 states that are working on certifying environmental educators, non-formal educators as well as teachers. There's a group called NCATE that accredits universities that prepare teachers and other school professionals. And these guidelines have been used in the development of NCATE environmental education standards and those certification schemes. And they're used in, you know, universities that prepare teachers and prepare environmental educators and all those sorts of things. So if you do professional development of classroom teachers or educators in general, you might want to take a look at these. Next slide are the non-formal environmental ed programs, and these guidelines are kind of soup to nuts if you're developing a non-formal program. So at that zoo or museum or nature center or, you know, after-school program or family program, any of those kinds of things. Literally starts with, you know, needs assessment and goes through the design and implementation and through to evaluation. Next slide. These are our final set of guidelines, or at least the ones that we just completed. We published them in September. Early childhood environmental ed programs. So basically what they do is start to say, well, what are the key characteristics of quality environmental education or environment-oriented programs for young learners? And although early childhood is birth to 8 years old, it really focuses primarily in the 3 to 6-year-old range. And it covers everything from curriculum framework and professional development to philosophy, developmentally appropriate practice, outdoor spaces, bringing the environment into the classroom, all those sorts of things. And the final slide is a link, which is also up on the CleanNet site. So if you go back to the CleanNet site and link that, it's EE-linked, and it should take you there. And basically, this is EE-linked is a bigger site, so if you just back yourself out to EELink.NAA.net, you'll see the bigger picture. But here we have all sorts of stuff on the guidelines, and one of the things is that you can actually download every one of those documents in a PDF file. So you can read it online, you can download it, and so it allows you to get into the guts of it a bit more.
And I'd just like to point out that the item just below that is the alignment between the guidelines, ocean literacy, and climate literacy. It's right there.
And that's what I was just going to point out to you, is that on the posts here, so if you look on the left-hand side, it says filter by topic. So if you clicked on the third item down, the EE Materials Guidelines for Excellence, you would see a blurb about those instructional materials guidelines, and you would also have a link to be able to download the PDF. But I've also posted on here the crosswalk that was created for between the EE guidelines and climate literacy, one that is just EE guidelines and ocean literacy, and one that kind of combines both of them. So I posted those just for the field to be able to look at and use and play with and all that kind of stuff. But all that work links back to the CLEAN project.
I noticed that on the document, though, the crosswalk, it has draft still in the watermark.
Right.
Is there a process of going from draft to final?
Well, I was actually personally just using it as draft for right now because since it hadn't been officially put up onto the CLEAN stuff, I kind of wanted, in case there was going to be any changes. So it's kind of, we're caught a little bit in a catch-22 of that you guys are waiting for me and I'm waiting for you. So once I sort of hear back from you guys that you're happy and don't want me to change something, I will get rid of the watermark.
Okay, we will put this on the agenda to address soon.
Hey, Bora, this is Art.
Hi, Art.
I was looking, I looked around and I didn't see easily where I could just download the whole document.
Okay, so if you're there, let's just click on to Materials Guidelines. So in the left hand, there's a filter by topic. It's kind of a grayish panel.
Uh-huh.
And you go down to the third thing, and it says EE Materials Guidelines for Excellence. If you click on that, you have to do a couple of clicks, uh-huh, which is kind of a pain.
Okay.
And then it'll say Environmental Education Materials Guidelines for Excellence in the right-hand column, column, and it has a little blurb on it. If you click on that.
Click on.
Okay. So the title.
Okay.
It's a link.
Yeah.
And then there's a summary and a bit more of a longer blurb. And either in the right-hand column, there's one of those little, underneath the graphic, there's a little PDF symbol, and it says Materials Guidelines Complete.
Uh-huh.
You can either click there, or if you scroll down, it's in the left-hand side, it says Download PDF Copies, and it says Materials Guideline Complete. And
it also says it on the previous page when you clicked on that first. At the bottom it says download PDF copies, and the first one is Materials Guidelines Complete.
Ah, well, see? Good for you. You found something. I've only spent the last month working on this site.
So
you can download them all. And there's also, just if you don't really want to get into the, you know, hellaciousness of detail, there's always a one- or two-page summary that just gives you kind of the outline.
Great.
Right. So
this is great, Bora. Thanks.
Yeah.
You're welcome. But this will get you into being able to say something on those proposals.
Right. Also, last year you helped us by taking a look at people's proposals to make sure that
yes.
these were addressed. Would you be willing to, if people fill those out, would you be willing to take a look and make sure that people have addressed it sufficiently?
Yeah, our hope is that this year, by doing this session on a conference call, that people will have the references that they need, that they'll be able to draft their own. And then after they've drafted them, if they have questions and would like a quick review, I'd be willing to do the quick review.
Okay,
yeah,
that's what I was suggesting, is that people fill it out, do it, is given all of this information that they can fill it out themselves, but then to just get an overview like this is or this is not going to cut it.
Yep. Right. Right. So since we have less than 15 minutes, I'd like to see if we can spend that time with people getting organized into groups of, you know, who wants to work on what kind of a proposal draft, and then in small groups work on those separate proposals for the conference.
And this doesn't exclude people from doing individual ones if you have a project that you would like to propose.
Absolutely.
What might be useful here is for us to talk about the kinds of things that might kinds of proposals that the Climate Literacy Network and the individuals within it could put forward, and then identify who would like to participate on which ones, and then just basically identify a set, basically the kind and the topic. And I know that Martha and Lynn have one for one of those workshops. And I know I would think that doing one for a roundtable discussion is a good idea. And then I know that there's been other discussions over the courses from last week to this week, and so I'll open that up now for people to identify. I don't know what all the rest of them are, so.
I have a list from last week's brainstorm session. Just let me know when you want to go through that.
All right, unless there's anybody else that wants to mention something now, we can start with that and then see if there's additions.
Well, one thing that I just noticed as I was looking at stuff during the call is that the GSA meeting ends on October 11th, which will matter for me. I don't know if it'll matter for other folks, but that'll probably rule me out of being involved in any pre-conference workshop.
And where is the GSA meeting?
It's in Minneapolis.
Okay.
One of the what I would suggest, though, is that if you have an interest in the workshop but can't actually be there but
right.
might be able to provide some guidance, that you take part in the discussions and just make it clear that you can't be there.
Great. That makes sense.
In line with that, Don, is there any way to do virtual attendance? Has that been done at these meetings? Because with the federal budgets being what they are and our carbon footprints and all the other responsibilities, it would probably be a good idea if we could find a way to either video Skype or do a better job being able to participate without actually flying.
What has been done in the past is video access to some of the keynotes. In the past, they have not had video access to workshops themselves. There have been, I'm losing the word. What do you call it when you have a one-hour or two-hour webinar? There have been webinars, but those have been separate from the conference itself.
Right. Yeah. It's an issue that we've discussed a bunch of times. I don't think we've ever really handled it.
I understand.
That is a really interesting idea, though.
And the Climate Literacy Network might also want to sponsor a webinar through NAAEE. That's a possibility that would need to be separate from this conference discussion.
Sure. I think I know in trying to bring, and I agree with separate is the appropriate place, but I think this is something that requires a focused conversation. It's a general thing, and this would be a good target, actually. And I know Internet 2 would probably be a good potential partner to bring in. We've worked with them in the past, and they've done really fine work, and they need content badly. So, you know, just maybe we should just table that for our future conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll just say that the title I would like to work on, this is Lynn, on a at least part of either a panel or part of a day-long conference on the effectively communicating the facts of global warming, climate change to the media and audiences they reach. I wondered if does the CLN, when I know you evaluate all these materials, do you have any idea of how effective those materials are?
Well, it depends on what effective you mean. It's hard. You need to
reach,
tell me a little bit more about what you reach is different than effective. I mean, to me, so that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, well, I would say both. You know, what's their reach, and do they, you know, do they scare kids? Do they are they effective in actually getting kids engaged in climate science, or you know, are they effective in getting kids engaged in climate solutions? Those kinds of questions. If there's any. Has there been evaluation?
Well, in terms of the CLEAN project, it's CLEAN as opposed to CLN. CLN is a climate literacy network, so they're different. Our review process looked at how good individual materials were. We didn't have any research into how extensively they were used or how effective they are in engaging and effectively informing students about things, because we don't have any information about that at all. And that's not to say that individual projects, individual groups don't. I mean, it may be worth having a panel that does address this, but the CLEAN Pathway Project isn't in a position to, not the kind of review that we did, doesn't get at that issue.
There is a suggestion from last week about a symposium/panel on how to teach controversy, and I checked with Susan Burr, and she is interested in participating in that. She was one of the names that was mentioned last week. Frank, your name was also mentioned, and Peg Steffen last year suggested that NOAA resources might be well included in that. Do you have any views on participation in that?
Absolutely, and it's not just NOAA. It's NOAA, EPA, and U.S. Forestry Service are all co-working on the same thing, and I find it's very interesting in the professional responsibilities for environmental educator section of the professional development document. The emphasis on education, not advocacy. I'm actually looking at that for another project I'm working on right now, and it's very cleaning up the line and the issue between those things within the education would be incredibly valuable, but also giving educators the ability and skill to work in this area without getting hammered, which is what's happening right now. About 50% of teachers are getting heat from somebody on the climate.
It sounds like we ought to proceed with plans for a symposium on that topic.
Let me ask a question here, Karen. Are these two different topics, how to teach controversy, and then one around the advocacy education line, or is this one step?
On last week's call, we were including that advocacy versus education perspective as part of the teaching about controversy.
Yeah, and I would argue that they are linked. Just because you need to understand where that line is and where it becomes quite gray in order to be able to effectively teach controversial issues. So I would put it, Frank, just as a point, not only does the professional development guidelines, it talks about education versus advocacy, but look at key characteristic number one of the material guidelines, because that's about fairness and accuracy, and it really gets at a lot of those issues, too, for instructional materials.
And which one was that?
That's the materials guidelines, the first one.
Okay, so without getting bogged down in any one of these ideas, because our time's running out, either Bora or I will take the lead on that one. And Frank, should we contact you for the NOAA contact on that?
It would be me and Peg. Both of
us. You and Peg. Okay.
And this is Don, and I'd be very interested in being part of that, too.
Is that Don?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, Don, last week you mentioned organizing another funders symposium.
Yeah, I'd be glad to do that, too.
Yeah, that I thought that that was a very good symposium last year. It was very well received.
Okay. So we have two that have somebody in the lead moving forward. We also talked last week about doing one with the major climate change education projects that are looking for partners. Are any of those organizations or agencies on the line?
Well, I'm one of them, but the proposals for that are due in two months.
Oh, okay.
So
timing is not right.
Yes. But that being said, I think that there may be one of the things that we did at the AGU meeting is we brought together projects, climate change education projects, to discuss issues across the project at the AGU meeting. We had about 30 people there representing maybe on the order of 20, 25 projects. So we may think about it. It wouldn't be the same thing as those looking for partners because the timing is off for that.
Okay.
But they are regional networks, so making there are a number of regional and thematic networks that are involved there, so that might be worthwhile thinking about further.
Do you want to take a lead on that, Tamara, or not?
At least in terms of us starting to think about it, because I mean we have that meeting. I mean this issue of the line between advocacy and education that you're going to be leading. That was a major discussion at the meeting we had at AGU.
Right.
And so it may be worthwhile thinking about how we can keep that kind of conversation going and how it might interface effectively with the NAAEE meeting. And I'm not sure about that right now. So maybe offline or by email we can have a conversation about that and see how we might position that effectively.
Okay, good.
I'll include Karen.
Who else wants to be on that?
Who else wants to be in this? At least these initial discussions on this one.
I can be. This is Bora.
Bora. Okay. Okay.
And then another one from last week had to do with Marta's suggestion of cognition and affect for greater effect. Is there anyone on the line who is interested in climbing on that one and trying to put something together?
Do you know what it means?
I think Marta would need to speak for that.
I what I think it means is more on the psychological aspects and being able to address people's, you know, their passions more effectively so that they then have basically take on an action plan. But I'm not an expert in this. I just have heard people talk about it before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was actually thinking that maybe Marta would be interested in doing something with how can the arts be used to present the story of climate change, because I know that's what she does. And that would also encompass film. And you know, we have all these kids here at CU making films about climate science.
Gee, that sounds like a neat idea. Would you be willing to contact Marta and see if you can lead a proposal submission on that?
Mm-hmm.
This might be a bit orthogonal, but remember the presentation by the APA on their work on climate change and psychology? It seems, we're really getting into what's driving people, and the arts is part of that, and the affective stuff. But it might be an interesting thing to weave both the psychology and the arts together.
Janet Swim was the person that we had give that talk. I mean, if Lynn, if you're willing to contact her and see if she's interested.
Yeah, I think that the psychology of climate change is really important. I think we might be talking about two things as far as using film to teach climate science.
All right, well, I can do is I can email her and see if she's interested. I think she is on our listserv, but she doesn't call in very often. But I wouldn't lead this, but I could contact her. Is there anybody else who's interested in if she is interested in moving forward, would be interested in being part of the discussion?
I just got disconnected. This is Martha, so I missed what that was. Keep up with Lynn.
What I was just asking was we had Janet Swim from the American Psychological Association give a talk on climate change and psychology, and I said I'd be willing to contact her to see if she'd be willing to move forward on a proposal around this topic for this meeting, but I wouldn't be part of this moving it forward except to contact her, and I wanted to know if anybody else on the call was interested in being part of that discussion.
I definitely would like to be on that discussion.
And who is this?
Martha.
Okay.
Because that's what Lynn and I were talking about is how to, how much is too much, how to empower people, what works, that kind of thing.
All right. Well, if it's just you also, then I will, when I email Janet Swim, I'll CC you on the email, and if she's interested, then the two of you can start having that conversation.
Deborah, this is Art. If you could include me as a CC on that as well.
Okay.
Great. Okay, so I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4, and maybe a fifth. Yeah. We have Don leading a funder symposium proposal, Lynn and the people who just were now mentioned leading a proposal that has to do with arts, affective, maybe psychology, some combination of that. Bora or I will lead a proposal on for a symposium on how to teach about controversy, and then Tamara and Bora and I will get off online and discuss whether there's something about cross-project discussion that gels. Then the other one that people have talked about is this all-day workshop, and I know there's a cast.
Well, wait a minute, you missed this last one, the one on climate psychology and climate change.
Is that the same as the one that Lynn's pursuing?
No.
Different. And who's taking the lead on that one?
That's the one that I'm going to contact Janet Swim, and Martha Shaw and Art Sussman are going to be CC'd on that. And if she's interested in moving it forward, they'll...
But, I'm thinking this could be connected, because we're talking about what's effective communication, and this is what Martha's, with her Earth advertising is...
All right, so these can potentially... We'll start off with these potentially being in one pie, and then you can have the conversation and then decide whether to split it into two.
Yeah, that sounds good, like needing to have success stories. And Caroline should also be part of this. I'm sure she would want to be because she's about messaging being fun.
Yep.
Okay. Now, there's another one that, before you go on to the workshop, is that I will lead a proposal for a Climate Literacy Network roundtable.
Good. Okay.
Great.
And then are we ready to go to the workshop, all-day workshop question? What we need for the all-day workshop is somebody to lead it.
Well, Lynn and I, we had these four components talked about that could involve different people, but it talked about building community, building content, some kind of hands-on thing where, you make a small hay bale house or like a little... Just some kind of clean energy little project wouldn't take very long to make it interactive, and then how you communicate messaging. So it would be the components of an all-day workshop.
You know what I think might be a good idea for this is that we have a space to start discussions on the Climate Literacy Network site. If you could take the notes and your description of that and put it there and then send an email to the list.
Who are you talking to, Tamara?
I thought I was talking to Martha.
Okay.
Martha, you and Lynn were the ones that put together this initial proposal for the workshop, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just loosely.
Just that
right.
outline.
So if you could, yeah, well, that's the point, is that you could post that outline there and invite discussion from the entire Climate Literacy Network, and then you'll winnow down to those people who are interested in working with you, and we could even set up a separate telephone call to facilitate that discussion further, or you can just continue it on the discussion thread if that works.
Mm-hmm. Well, one idea would be to try to make a one-day workshop that was sort of easy and redundant so that other people could go out and conduct them, or teachers could pick up on them and they'd have these materials.
Mm.
So it would be cookie cutter. That's kind of what we did. It almost became a speaker's bureau, so other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that would extend beyond that conference. That's kind of what we did with Gila Bay, and I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
You've got kids becoming the workshop directors after a while.
I think that if you could post those ideas all in one place so that people can sort of see, and if you have a link to what you've done before using this model, that will help other people conceptualize it and then help think through a proposal. The proposals aren't due they're due really relatively soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, February 1st.
2 weeks, February 1st.
Right. So,
Let me interject, or I guess ask a question. In talking with Susan Burr about this, I'm not sure whether I had a somewhat of a different idea or whether it's similar, and I just want to clarify. I had thought that this would be sort of a combined all-day workshop that would feature resources from a number of the different climate change education projects that are represented in the network. And Susan and I talked specifically about their videos of scientists explaining different aspects of climate change research. I'm wondering whether that fits with the ideas that Martha and Lynn are talking about.
Yeah, so well, you're talking about this symposium panel that you were talking to Susan Burr about?
No, I'm talking about the all-day workshop.
Okay, so
I think that's what we're on right now. It's the all-day workshop, right?
In addition to that panel, I'm just...
Yeah, I think that would fall into the content section, was like what content...
Can you tell me, so Karen and Bora, it sounds like we have a whole lot of ideas around what this all-day workshop might be, and it could be that there's so many ideas that it may be worthwhile thinking about proposing two different ones and one gets accepted.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Or, it could be that two get accepted. I don't know that would happen. But it seems to me it's worthwhile deciding what the focus of the all-day workshop is or whether there are two foci.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would help me thinking about it.
I think that first of all, we're 10 minutes past two.
Yep.
Two now. It's necessary to have further discussion about this to sort this out. So I suggest, like I did before, that you post the ideas you have now and then explicitly identify those questions. And then send an email to the list inviting people to look at that and basically ask for a quick turnaround, like a couple of days for people to weigh in. And then if it's necessary, let me know and we can set up another phone call,
mm-hmm.
Before next Tuesday.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add Susan's videos of scientists. This would work in perfectly with the whole thing on film. You're using, the arts. Because these kids are making films of scientists, so it could be different ways of using film, something like
mm-hmm.
that. And that might be a separate...
I know we have one of the climate change education projects, UPIA NASA ones, also has involved students making films. And they've actually done some with a undergraduate level course on ecology, and the students developed films about environmental issues that I saw a few of, which were very good. So it could be another avenue. I can talk to Juliet about that too.
Okay.
This is Jay. I'd be interested in being in on the discussion regarding the psychology and communicating.
Jay, you're going to have to tell me your... Why don't you send me an email with your name, because I just don't know your name and email address.
Okay. Okay. And who is just
speaking? This is Tamara.
Tamara
okay.
was on vacation last week, Jay.
Okay.
Yes.
Keep going.
Oh, yes, you'll have to introduce yourself to me. I think you actually sent an email. Did you send an email to me?
I sent an email out to everybody on the list.
Okay, yep, I got that. All right. So
and I'll just
send it to the list
that I'm interested in the communication psychology thing, too.
Okay.
Excellent.
That's fine.
This is Martha. I keep going in and out because I actually am at the UN going into some... And so I'm going to sign off because I keep going out. But it's like there is a lot of initiatives going on at the UN around this too. So I'm really excited about even the exercise of coming up with some programs is really a nice opportunity. So thank you.
Okay.
So Tamara, will you send an email to all of us with where this site is that you're referring to?
Yeah, I can do that. Also, if you could, you had this list of items and who's going to lead what. If you can send me your list. I will put it with the notes so it's available for everybody to see.
Excellent. Okay, I'll do that today.
All right, great.
Super.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you, Tamara.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
All right.